Hello and welcome to Spectrum Iran. Tonight we're going to look at Iran's Islamic Revolution 35 years on. Stay with us. Welcome back. The Iranian nation will on Tuesday, February 11th, celebrate the 35th anniversary of the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution that put an end to the monarchy of the US-backed Pahlavi regime in the country. The people are set to take part in nationwide rallies and, needless to say, seize the opportunity to reaffirm their allegiance to the Islamic establishment and the ideals of the late founder of the Republic, Imam Khomeini. In these 35 years, Iran has made great strides in science and technology, particularly in the key fields of medicine, aerospace, nuclear science, nano, stem cell, cloning research, industry, energy and defense. But apart from these, what has given Iran its status and power is its ability to stand against colonizing and hegemonic powers and to lead an axis of resilience and resistance in which Iran has embraced the causes of the oppressed in the world. Tonight we're going to look at Iran's Islamic Revolution 35 years on and see why the Iranian nation still continues to support the Islamic establishment in such large numbers despite foreign pressures and sanctions directed at ordinary Iranian people. And to help us with our show, we have the pleasure of being joined in the studio by Professor Christopher Galloway, Senior Lecturer in Public Relations from the School of Communications, Journalism and Marketing at Massey University in New Zealand. Professor Galloway, thank you for giving us the pleasure of your time, sir.
I'm very happy to be here. It's my fifth visit to Iran and I'm delighted to be back in Tehran.
It's great to have you back, sir. Before we get into our discussion proper, let's take a listen to our narration. Stay with us. Ceremonies kicked off in Iran on Saturday, February the 1st, marking the 35th anniversary of the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. February 1st, 1979, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, arrived back home from exile. He'd spent more than 14 years in exile, mostly in the Iraqi holy city of Najaf. He'd also spent some time in Turkey and France before his return to Iran. The day when Imam Khomeini returned to Tehran marks the start of 10 days of celebrations, better known as the 10-day dawn festivities, which culminate in nationwide rallies on February 11th, the anniversary of the triumph of the Islamic Revolution. The Iranian nation toppled the US-backed Pahlavi regime 35 years ago, ending the 2,500 years of monarchic rule in the country. The Islamic Revolution, spearheaded by the late Imam Khomeini, established a new political system based on Islamic values and democracy. Thank you. During the 10-day dawn festivities, Iranians take part in different events and activities to mark the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Welcome back to Spectrum Iran. Chris Calloway, we just mentioned, sir, this is your fifth visit to Iran. What brings you to Iran, and how do you see Iran? How does it differ from the way you see it and from the way it is depicted in the Western media, sir?
Well, I come from the small country of New Zealand that is no stranger to finding its own way in international affairs. Mm-hmm. For years, we were criticized by certain countries for our independent stance against nuclear power. Mm-hmm. And so we've had the courage of our political convictions to stake our own way. But I come because of the Iranian people, and while that might sound like a cute thing to say,
exactly,
it's true. There is a proverb of the native people to New Zealand, which in translation says, it's from a poem actually, what is the most important thing in life? And the answer in the poem is, it is people, it is people, it is people. People. And I come because I've found the Iranian people to be warm-hearted and in fact over the top generous.
Thank you.
And I have professional associations and contacts here.
Great.
My visit is about deepening those if we can, but it is friends and the people here that draw me back.
Great. Mr. Galloway, how does Iran differ from the way it is depicted in foreign media from your perspective, sir?
Well, let's talk about how those media pictures are constructed.
Please.
I think that they are constructed using slogans and images that have an impact for people who do not think very hard about what the issues are. And that's, mm-hmm. let's face it, that's many people. They are what an academic like me would call cognitive misers. That is, that they are lazy in the way that they think about things. So when someone says Iran is, and they attach a particular word or an image to it, they don't think about it too much because they have other closer to home concerns.
Right.
But I think it takes actually, for example, coming here, meeting people, talking to them, to see that there is a different side to the story, and that is the side that needs to be heard, and I hope will be increasingly heard.
Good. What side is that, sir?
I think it is the side about the fact that there is more than one view on the issues that are so debated in the Western media, mm-hmm. and that side, the Iranian perspective, and those of others who do not share the dominant discourse, that is valid and needs to be heard, and your program and others are helping to do that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also through personal contacts and starting to see on the ground that things are different that's important, and so that's also why I like to come.
Great. How does massive participation in nationwide rallies such as the ones planned for tomorrow by people across the from all walks of life mm. across the nation help to express this conviction, political convictions, loud and clear yeah. to this argument, this discourse to the people outside the country?
Well, I'm going tomorrow as an individual, not as a representative of the university, but I'm also here in Tehran because I have encouraged my university to seek to build more formal understandings with the university here. So we are hopeful that we can have stronger university-to-university relationships
right.
between Iran and New Zealand.
Great. You talked of the political convictions of the people in New Zealand to oppose nuclear weapons. These days, when the talks of nuclear negotiations between Iran and the 5+1, Professor Galloway, there is talk of Iran building trust, Iran needing to build trust, Iran needing to win their confidence. If my memory serves me right, as far as I know, Iran has never attacked any country with nuclear weapons, attacked civilian centers such as what US has done. So if it comes to a matter of nuclear trust, why should the people of the world trust the American nation in that regard?
Let's look first of all at a principle that I think should underlie these whole discussions, which is my personal conviction is, and I've expressed it many times to friends and contacts here, Iran has the right and should be accorded the right to determine its own future in the light of its own principles, just as any other sovereign nation has the right. Just as New Zealand has a right to determine its own future, so it's my conviction that Iran should have and be accorded that right. So I see that as fundamental. Beyond that, I think the history of the way that powers outside Iran have behaved is one of the factors in the very fragile trust climate, if I can call it that, at the moment. It's not just something that, as the Western media would portray, is the responsibility of Iran and those who are supporting Iran. So I think it will take time. I tell my students that trust is built by the experience of trustworthiness over time. And it's my personal hope that as steps are taken, have been already taken, and will be taken, I hope in the future, that that trust will slowly build. But because it has been assaulted is not too strong a word, over so many years, it will take time to rebuild.
Great. And Chris Galloway, the reports of Islamic Republic's demise have been circulating for years, for decades. And indeed, Western pundits began predicting the expiry of the Islamic revolution, the Republic, practically prior to its inception. But the Islamic revolution is going strong 35 years on. As far as you're concerned, sir, why this colossal miscalculation on the part of the Western pundits?
I think the Western pundits look at Western countries which are very divided politically, socially, economically, and in many other ways. And given that internal division in their societies, they find it hard to acknowledge a society where there is a much greater foundation of values and principles. And I think it's the failure to recognize the cohesiveness that can come from commitment to those principles that perhaps has been an influence in their miscalculation, as you put it.
Right. And Christopher Galloway, you said this is your fifth visit. Are you surprised by the resilience shown by the Iranian nation, despite the maybe political differences that they have, despite discontent, the problems that they're facing, that when it comes to supporting the establishment, the Islamic establishment, they put all the differences aside and they back the establishment and they've shown this time and time again. How does this add up? Why is the discontent, in a sense, or problem being misconstrued by the West to say that the establishment is in at times in danger?
I think the West miscalculates the commitment that the Iranians that I've met anyway have to their country. May I tell you a brief story?
Please.
On a previous visit, I asked a woman who was a key organizer of a conference I was speaking at. At the time, there was much publicity in Western media about possible attacks by Western powers on Iran and the Iranian program for nuclear power. And I said to her, what do you think will happen? And she said, well, if they attack, even my father will fight. And he was an old man.
That's right.
So this, to me, summed up the commitment that people have to their country above all else.
Great. And Mr. Galloway, President Obama and other senior U.S. officials have, over the years, expressed their love, respect, and affection for the Iranian nation. They say we have no problem with the Iranian people. It's the establishment that we are concerned with. They've expressed their love for the culture, for the history. But on the other hand, we see them imposing sanctions which are affecting ordinary Iranian people, children going without certain drugs, which is leading to their misery or death. How do these add up?
Well, I think the simple answer is that they don't, and that people responsible for these crimes ultimately will be judged, mm-hmm. whether it's on a human level or ultimately one day by the judgment of God. Mm-hmm. These people will have to face that. I'm sure that they are genuine when they say that they have a great respect for Iran and Iranian culture. I share that. I come from a Christian background and country, but I come here with a great, profound sense of respect for what I find in Iran.
Great. And how did you get to learn about the culture of Iran? So what actually, how were you exposed to this culture?
Well, I was first invited to speak to a public relations conference here in Tehran several years ago, mm-hmm. and then had the honor of being invited back repeatedly. So it was those repeated visits that have given me more and more exposure to the life of Iran. And I hope to continue coming and learning more.
Inshallah. And Chris Galloway, why, as an expert in public relations, in communications, give us your take on the reasons as to why Western media depict Iran in such negative lights.
I think it is ultimately, some of it is ideologically driven, mm-hmm. but some of it is simple ignorance. People have not themselves come to Iran to see for themselves. So it is simply being willing to accept the lines that are given by other people, mm-hmm. rather than carefully examining the realities, the truth, if you like, for themselves.
Good. What should Iran do in view of these challenges to get the message across to the wider audience?
I think I would like to see Iran do more to challenge these misconceptions in the Western media, mm-hmm. and to be more proactive in presenting the Iranian position in those media. One of the things I learned as a media relations manager for a large organization in New Zealand was that if you allow things to go unchallenged for too long, they will become accepted as a fact.
That's right.
Whereas if you confront the people presenting untruths, mm-hmm. at the time or soon afterwards, you have an opportunity to try to change things. And it's a pretty small window. So I would be wanting to encourage the responsible authorities here in Iran to have, and I don't mean to sound patronizing in using this term, the confidence to put forward the Iranian position with more energy still.
That's right. Okay, great. And Chris Galloway, how do you see Iran's role as a person, as an expert, as an academic observing the developments? How do you see Iran's role in the international stage, in the international political arena?
One of the things, and I'm a close observer of what is happening both here in Iran and in the whole region, is I see Iran being slowly accorded a greater and greater status and more influence in what happens in the region, and I think that's fitting for a country of the size, the economy of the importance, and the model, if you like, of Iran to the region. So I expect that Iran will play a greater and greater role in helping to determine what happens in this part of the world.
Great. And Mr. Galloway, Iran has the Iranian nation has over 35 years expressed its political conviction to stand against hegemonic powers, authoritarian powers, and back oppressed nations such as Palestine. And do you see this other nations taking a leaf out of Iran's book in a sense?
I think it's hard from the outside to determine whether they are directly influenced by Iran's stance, but I do think it is really important to confront what I can only call evil at times, and to take a firm stand for an alternative position to that which is produced by the Western media. Some the Western media have their own reasons, as we've discussed, for mm-hmm. saying what they say. But to allow it to go entirely unchallenged, as I mentioned earlier, can allow people to think that things are true that are not true.
Great. And personally speaking, what do you consider as being among the major accomplishments of Iran since the Islamic Revolution? What you've noticed over your visits during the years?
Well, before I came, I was talking to people at the Iranian embassy in Wellington, New Zealand, which is our capital.
That's right.
And they were describing to me the great strides that have been made in literacy since the time of the revolution. And it's astonishing.
That's right.
And one of the reasons why I think you mentioned Iran's resilience earlier, one of the reasons why I think Iran has been able to be as resilient as it is just simply that today Iranian young people are very well educated.
That's right.
They can take on the world because of the strength of the education system here. And may that continue.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Spectrum Iran. Chris Calloway, can I pick you on the comment you made regarding Iran needing to adopt a more confident approach towards the Western media? Can you shed more light on that, please?
I think this is important because when one of the areas that I study is how reputations are formed. And reputations, of course, can attach to countries as well as to corporations.
That's right.
And it's well established that countries with a negative reputation can suffer economically. Those with a positive reputation Sure. obviously gain benefits. For example, more tourists tend to go to places that have a better reputation. Mm-hmm. And
or even financial investment, etc.
Of course. The thing is that reputation is only partially based on people making a logical assessment of facts.
That's right.
Emotions, beliefs, perceptions, media images are all important as well. So when it comes to national reputations, it's important to understand the interplay of these factors and to realize that when people hear certain things about Iran, they feel in some cases disturbed at the prospect of someone like me coming to Iran. They say, will you be safe? And I say, but of course.
Right.
It's because the emotions have been engaged and they feel fearful of what they don't know.
Unsafe, that's right.
And they think that people like me are going, whereas I could go to many other cities than Tehran around the world and be incredibly unsafe.
That's right.
In certain places. So I think it's about putting together a strategy that takes account of and also addresses the emotional and the belief-based responses that people have to news about Iran, not just saying, here are the facts, because for some people, the facts will not be enough. It's addressing their emotional responses that counts as well.
Great. And Mr. Galloway, as an observer, how do you see the future shaping for the Islamic Revolution, the way things are?
Well, I think it is obviously not an easy path with many outside influences seeking to exert pressures. But I think with sound leadership, I think with the commitment of the people that we talked about before, the future has to be one of continued progress. And I certainly hope that for Iran and for my friends here.
Great. And what will be the message that you'll take back on your current visit to your students in Wellington, sir, in New Zealand?
Well, I hope to say to them, you should do what I've been doing and come as well and see for yourselves. Because the reality is not the same as you are given in the media that you're exposed to. And I guess the fact that I'm here partly to talk with a colleague who's arriving this week about deepening inter-university relationships is one example of something that we hope to achieve. We hope to achieve greater exchanges of ideas, possibly collaborations on projects. So scientific cooperation, and I think the more of these kinds of relationships that can be established with Iran by other countries, the brighter the future will have to be.
Great. And Professor Galloway, we've seen Iran being labeled the axis of evil by the US, supporting terrorism, etc. There are a host of reasons that America is being hostile to the Islamic Republic. Mm. What do you consider as being the main reasons that America is assaulting Iran, in a sense, in various fronts,
yeah.
Be it economically, cyber warfare, politically, etc. Why is the strength of this animosity?
Well, let's just go back to a word that you used there. You talked about Iran being accused of supporting terrorism. Terrorism or a terrorist is a very loaded term. One person's terrorist can be another person's freedom fighter.
That's right.
So I think it is, in that instance, it can be an attempt to label people as terrorists who others of us might see as people who are taking a principled stand against injustice. So there is that factor at work. And who knows what some of the motivations of the media are in the West. We can speculate. I think that America's response is obviously caught up by its entanglement, and I think we could use that term,
that's right,
in other parts of the Middle East where the situation is long-standing and incredibly complex, obviously. So I think the entanglements in other parts of the region play a strong part in determining America's attitude to Iran.
So Iran, in a sense, is paying the price of its conviction, for example, supporting the oppressed people of Palestine?
I think that whole situation is clearly crucial. And although I am not optimistic that the present processes moving forward will achieve much because of the attitudes on one side, at least, of that conflict, my hope is that some progress will be achieved and that situation also will improve.
Professor Galloway, what about the fact that Iran has, over 3.5 decades, challenged the so-called the political order, which is favored by Washington?
Well, I think that's a good thing, because all wisdom does not reside in Washington. Mm-hmm. And as I was saying earlier, alternative voices need to be heard. I believe, if you like, in the idea of a marketplace of ideas.
That's right.
Where you allow more than just one dominant voice to be heard, and you allow people to make up their own minds rather than telling them what to think.
But what about this freedom of expression when they advocate certain rights in other places? But we've seen it over the last year or so. Many Iranian media channels have been taken off Western satellites. And it seems this alternative voice is being stifled. Why is this? How does this add up?
I think it goes back to some of the things that I was talking about before. A certain fear, if you like, of people actually buying into the alternative views and undermining the dominant discourse. That may be a factor. I think it is people allowing one perception of the situation. There you mentioned the axis of evil thing, a sloganeering approach to mm-hmm. things, to spill into all sorts of other areas where they don't belong. And my hope is that in those situations where Iranian channels have been taken off satellites, that it would be possible to negotiate a return on those satellite feeds.
And Pascal, what else does Iran need to do? You talked about a more confident approach towards Western media. What else does Iran need to do to get its message across and to get the message to the wider world that this Iranophobia, as it were, it's this tarnishing of the Iranian reputation and image, there is no truth in it at all.
I don't know what kind of communication strategizing happens within the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, for example, but I'm someone who teaches communication strategy, and I'm a believer in the value of a planned but flexible, coordinated strategy to communicate key messages. And so if such coordination is lacking at the moment in any way at all, I would be an advocate of tighter coordination, tighter cooperation with within different Iranian agencies overseas to achieve greater consistency of message and maybe better targeting of that message to the appropriate media and public opinion channels.
Great. And earlier, sir, you were telling us about the conference organizer on your previous visit saying mm-hmm. that if the US were to attack Iran, even her elderly father would, yes. Take up arms and go to the front. Are you surprised by this commitment, resilience of the nation? And what causes a nation to be so resilient, in a sense, as far as you're concerned?
I think many people in many countries have this kind of commitment to their country. Mm-hmm. And as we talked about earlier, are willing to put aside differences over policies, perhaps, or suggested paths of development in order to stand for the nation above all. I would go back to what I was talking about earlier. I think it is commitment to certain principles and values. I think it is commitment to the country as such. And I think it is people being willing to acknowledge that they are part of something that is greater than themselves as an individual, which is not necessarily true of the highly individualistic orientation in some Western societies.
Great. And on your previous visits, have you ever taken part in the 22nd of Bahman rallies, the rallies marking the victory of the Islamic Revolution?
No, this will be my first time tomorrow. And I specifically asked to arrange to come in time to be there for the rally tomorrow.
Interesting. What are you hoping to see? What are you expecting to see?
I guess for me it will be a learning experience to see what the people are doing and saying, and I hope to go away with a better impression of this particular aspect of Iranian life.
Great. And will you be talking to? Will you be talking to the Iranian people, to Tehran residents who will be taking part? Will you be?
I'll certainly take whatever opportunities there may be tomorrow to talk to people, and I'll be with a group of people, I understand, tomorrow, and I will obviously be asking them for detailed information about what's happening. So I'll try to absorb as much as I can of the energy in the rally tomorrow.
Great. And prior to your visits to Iran, have you ever been pressured, in a sense, to reconsider your decision, sir?
Well, let me tell you a recent story before I came on this visit.
Please.
Tickets were booked and paid for, and I got a call from the travel agent saying, Iran is listed as a high-risk country to visit. Do you have permission to go from the highest authority in the university?
So really?
I went back and said, yes, we do. But that was an illustration, if you like. It wasn't pressure, it was just saying, look, Iran has this big black mark against it in our particular guidelines. Are you sure it's the right thing to do to go? And of course, we're committed to being here.
That's right. So that may have frightened other people.
I think so. There may be some organizations who are guided by those sorts of travel advisories and are not prepared to do as we are doing and saying, well, there's something more important at stake here.
But in the world of academia, have you been approached, have you been given messages directly or indirectly that your visits to Iran and the fact that you returned to New Zealand with news which surely counters the official media version?
Yeah. Some years ago, before the first time I came, when an academic friend and senior colleague knew that I was planning to go, he commented to me, he said, you want to think about whether you go to Iran, you want to watch the effect on your reputation. So he was suggesting that my reputation would be damaged if I came to Iran.
Exactly, I was going to ask you, as an expert in risk and reputation management, yeah, has that in any way affected your own reputation as an expert? Or
I don't believe so. I don't believe so at all. And I've forged some good relationships with people here. And if the collaborations that we hope will result from those eventuate, then while it's not about me individually, I hope it will have a beneficial effect on my reputation.
And before we wrap up the program, Professor Galloway, give us your thought on the Iranian people. You've had interactions, you've had visits, academic, you've got friends in the country. What's your take on the Iranian nation and the people?
Well, can I give you another little story?
Please.
When I came through Tehran last time, I had been joking to a friend of mine before I came about the shirts that government spokespeople wear with the little high collars.
That's right.
And I was joking to him saying, when I see someone wearing a shirt like that, I will know that I've met a real Iranian. And I noticed that neither of those are wearing those shirts.
That's right.
But at the airport, I met a security guard who was wearing one of those. So I was joking to my friend, now I've met a real Iranian man. The same security guard was on duty when I left the airport. He came up to me, presented me with a shirt in a box.
Fantastic.
And to me, that just summed up the generosity of spirit of the Iranian people, and I was very grateful.
Thank you, sir. Well, we've got 30 seconds. Your concluding comments, if you
can give us those. It's easy to say, but I'm genuinely very happy to be back in Iran. I hope to learn more this time. As I mentioned earlier, we hope to strengthen relationships, both personally and at an institutional level. And I'm looking forward not only to the remainder of my visit, but to the next time that I'll be back.
Great. Well, with those comments, we've come to the end of this edition of Spectrum Iran. Special thanks to our special guest for his time and input. We had the pleasure of being joined in the studio by Christopher Galloway, senior lecturer in public relations from the School of Communication, Journalism and Marketing at Massey University in New Zealand. Professor Galloway, it was lovely to have you on the show, sir.
My great pleasure.
Thank you. And that's a wrap. I'd like to thank our viewers for staying tuned. Goodbye and God bless.